podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to the Punt podcast here with William Hill. Good to have your company ahead of a big footballing weekend. We have the North London Derby on Saturday afternoon, Spurs taking on Arsenal at Wembley. And, of course, we have the Merseyside Derby. Big game at Goodison, Sunday 4:15, Everton versus Liverpool. We'll also look ahead to the Football League in the company of Pete Ferries, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross. We've got Sam Norris with a bet in Europe. And we also have our FWA guest on the line now as well, Jack Pitbrook, the football journalist for The Independent, joins us this week alongside Derek McGovern, a regular staple of the podcast. First of all, it's a good morning to you, Jack. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Looking forward to the weekend. Derek, how are you?
Yes, I was celebrating my lovely red men consolidating their lead at the top after a cheeky fixture that they made to look easy. So all is well with me.
That was a good performance, wasn't it, Derek? Because it came, yep. They'd been slightly subdued recently and then they bounced back with that 5-0 win last night.
Yeah, I looked upon it with mixed feelings, though, because I've been telling everybody all week that Watford at 12-1 with a bet of the season. 5-0 defeat doesn't make me look great.
I'm sure there's more bets like that to come on this podcast, so stay tuned,
right,
folks. Let's get stuck into the weekend's action then. We're going to look at the five televised games in the Premier League, starting with Tottenham Hotspur versus Arsenal, which kicks off at 12:30 on Saturday. Spurs are 21-20 to win the game. The draw 13-5 with Arsenal 13-5. Enhanced odds, Arsenal to score in both halves was 100-30. It's now 4-1. If you fancy Spurs to win both halves, that was 9-2. That's been enhanced to 6-1 here with William Hill. Jack, there's suddenly only 4 points between the two North London clubs. And there was, I thought, an expectation that Spurs were going to come back from their 10-day break after that brilliant win against Dortmund, firing on all cylinders, Harry Kane returning. And it's not quite materialised like that. They've been a little bit disappointing in losses against Burnley and Chelsea.
Yeah, quite. I think things might be slightly starting to catch up with Spurs. They had a great run of form over December, January, as they often do. But looking back, I think they were slightly overperforming. Lots of those wins were from last-minute goals. They didn't really have that much strength and depth or the ability to rotate. They were just getting over the line in games. But I didn't really think they were playing that well, and they have really missed Harry Kane and Dele Alli, who obviously have been out since the start of the year with injuries. And I think maybe the Burnley and Chelsea games show things are starting to catch up with them. Like they can't keep overperforming all the time. And there are clear issues in the squad, particularly in midfield and at fullback, which haven't been solved all season. And now they're almost getting the results that they deserve.
There's never been a really a spending club or in recent history, Jack. Do you think that if Mauricio Pochettino is there in the summer, he'll get the opportunity to spend a bit of cash, because he's been working with his hands tied behind his back for the best part of 24 months?
He certainly has been. I think it depends on money they can generate, basically. Like, obviously, the stadium is proving to be incredibly expensive. You know, there'll be hundreds of millions of pounds in debt because of it. So it's all going to hinge on, you know, are they going to sell Christian Eriksen, which I think they might. They're probably going to sell Toby Alderweireld. What's going to happen to players like Sissoko or Wanyama? Is there going to be a naming rights deal for the new stadium? But they're going to have to make their own money somehow, because if they don't do that, then they're not going to be able to afford to buy the players they need.
What's your prediction in this one, Jack?
A week ago, I would have said easy Spurs win, because I do think they've got the edge over Arsenal. But I think things are turning a bit, to be honest. So I'm going to go for a nervy score draw.
Okay, both teams to score in a draw. That's available at 29-10. We know Derek, form is fickle in football, and Arsenal's lost to Bartek Borisov in that first leg a few weeks ago in that last 16 clash in the Europa League. Seems like a distant memory now. They turned that around in the second leg. They've beaten Southampton and Bournemouth subsequently, and they'll be going to Wembley with some real confidence. I think the tactical change that Unai Emery has made, going three at the back, has allowed Sead Kolasinac some space on the left-hand side, and it's meant that he's been able to bring Mesut Ozil back into the team as well. I'm not saying he's good value at £350,000 a week, Derek, but at least he's started to perform a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, in the other night, he actually did a bit of work. And most of the games this season, statistics have shown that Jeff Stelling has covered more ground than him on a Saturday afternoon. Yeah, but he did. He tends to do that, doesn't he? He comes in against crap teams, does quite well, and all of a sudden he's worth the King's ransom. He's being paid. I wouldn't have him in my Sunday team, to be honest, but, you know, I'm in a minority there. These two teams, I mean, you look at them at the start of every season and you think, well, you know, a couple of trophies, one trophy apiece should be well within their compass. But come the end of the season, you need to compass to locate a trophy for either of them. They get so many column inches, so much talk about them. And yet, they never seem to do anything. I'm fed up with these two teams, to be honest. Tottenham, I couldn't back with counterfeit money now, the way they've been playing. The game against Chelsea on Wednesday night, they look a team devoid of belief. You know, I heard the analyst, Joe Cole, and one or two others saying how well they played in the first half, probably deserved something out of it. I just couldn't see anything in that Tottenham lineup. That followed up the result of Burnley. That's a terrible result. And when you look at the way Burnley performed in the next game against Newcastle, they hardly franked the form. I think Tottenham are waiting for another defeat. And Arsenal are 5-2. I didn't think I'd say this maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, but they can be the only bet here.
Okay, Arsenal to win the game for Derek. By the way, another enhancement here with William Hill is Harry Kane and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang both to score. That was 100-30. That's been boosted to 5-1. Aubameyang has scored more London Derby goals than any other player in the Premier League this season. He's got 6, so that bet could be worth a look. Let's move on to West Ham versus Newcastle, which is the tea time kickoff on Saturday, 5:30. The Hammers 21-20 to win it. The draw 12-5 with Newcastle 27-10. There will be a whole range of enhancements on the website ahead of this game. Hashtag your odds as well. So if you want your bet on the website and it's not already priced up, do tweet using that hashtag your odds to @WilliamHill. The enhancement at the moment is West Ham to win both halves. That was 9-2. That's been boosted to 6-1. And I thought West Ham, they played reasonably well against Manchester City midweek. They defended stoutly, and there was a feeling of inevitability about the result from an early stage, but it was only a contentious penalty that made the difference, Derek. And they're unbeaten in 4 games at home at the London Stadium in the Premier League. And I'm expecting quite a lively encounter against a rejuvenated Newcastle side.
Yeah, that's the key. Newcastle are rejuvenated. This new guy they've brought in seems to be giving them a shot in the arm. And they look a proper team all of a sudden. Mostly at home, that's where they're getting the wins. And you look at the Bear League table and you think, well, you know, you'd want to back against Newcastle away from home. And they've only won 2 of, what, 13, I think it is. But, you know, you look at some of their recent results away from St James's Park, and they've only lost to the big teams, the Tottenhams, the Liverpools, the Chelseas, I think it was. Against teams like West Ham, they've generally held them to a draw, and I think the draw at 12-5 here is something to bet on. I can't back West Ham because I've lost too much money on them this season. I've seen them put in great performances, and I thought, yeah, I'll be on them next week. And then they throw in an absolute howler at your prices, and I go, why did I back them? I think 12-5 for the draw is well worth it. Because you know what, Newcastle, they've had a great win in midweek. They're climbing away from the relegation zone. But you know what the manager, Rafa Benitez's mindset is? You know, if he picks up a point away from home, more breathing space away from the relegation zone. And that's what when a Rafa Benitez side goes out to defend and keep a clean sheet, you've always got to keep the draw on your side because they do it better than most. So yeah, the draw for me at 12-5. West Ham are too short.
Okay, the Hammer's too short at 21-20 for Derek. Jack, it's impossible to understate, I think, how good a job Rafa Benitez has done, because this Newcastle side look unrecognisable to the one we saw at the start of the season. They look like they've got a couple of future England internationals in Sean Longstaff and Jamal Lascelles. And they brought in Miguel Almiron, who has looked terrific in his opening couple of games. Going well, Newcastle. I've been impressed with them recently.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Almiron is a fantastic player to watch already from what we've seen. He's got that amazing burst of pace in the middle. He's ambitious. He likes to shoot, play people in. I think he's really provided that lift that they've needed. But you're right, there have been contributions from other players. Longstaff's an exciting one. Also, I think Salomon Rondon up front is maybe not the most glamorous player, but he works so hard for the team. He's a kind of old-fashioned English number nine, really. He works so hard. He's very dangerous in the box. He's good in the air.
Jack, you're talking Dave's language there. Dave loves Salomon Rondon.
I love Salomon Rondon.
I should have known. So I do think that, like, overall they do look like a much more competent team than they used to. At the start of the season, they looked like they were definitely heading down. They looked like a championship team, basically.
Yeah.
Who was just waiting for relegation, whereas now there is a bit more optimism. But the really big question is whether or not that optimism will carry all the way through to Rafa signing a new contract in the summer, which is what the Newcastle fans are desperate for. But that's kind of now the next big question if they do manage to stay up.
What about West Ham, Jack? I mean, Felipe Anderson came in, hit the ground running. He's still their leading goal scorer this season with 8, but he's not scored in 9 games in the Premier League, Felipe Anderson. He seemed to rest some players midweek, which looks wise. Marco Arnautovic and Manuel Lanzini didn't start that game in midweek. It's whether or not Newcastle can produce the same sort of performances on the road as they do at St James's Park, I suppose. That will determine the outcome of this one.
Yeah, West Ham aren't in the best run at the moment. I think they've won 1 in the last 7. But I do think that the problem with Anderson is that he's had to be like the only creative player this year. He's their only player with any quality.
Yeah.
But now that Nasri's fit, now that Lanzini's coming back, then I think that maybe they can share that burden of creativity. And I do think that once they have all those guys in the pitch together, they'll be able to play the kind of football Pellegrini's always wanted to play. Like, Pellegrini's, I've interviewed him about this the other day. He's a very, very attacking, inventive coach who wants his team to play great football. This season, he's barely had any good attacking players, so he's had to kind of find a different way. But I think that when you get an Anderson, Nasri and Lanzini on the pitch together, then West Ham are going to be great to watch.
Yeah, I agree. Prediction in this one? Derek's gone with the draw?
West Ham to scrape it.
Saturday night marks the second El Clasico in just 4 days as Real Madrid and Barcelona go toe-to-toe for the second time this week, and Barca, quite frankly, took liberties in the Copa del Rey game between the two on Wednesday night, strolling to a 3-0 victory at the Bernabeu, which was capped by Luis Suarez Panenka to seal the win. It's been a fairly forgettable season all round for Real. They're miles behind Barcelona in the title race, with second place looking like the very best they can achieve this season. And there looked to be a real gulf in class between the two sides earlier in the week. And Barcelona at 11-8 to repeat the dose looks a very fair bet on Saturday night. Madrid haven't beaten Barcelona since the 2017 Super Cup and haven't won a league Clásico since 2016. And it's not even as if home advantage will count for much here. Los Blancos haven't beaten Barca at the Bernabeu in the league since 2015. Some of the recent meetings between the two sides haven't even been close. That 3-0 win in the Copa midweek was a carbon copy of the result in this corresponding fixture last season, and Barcelona also thumped Madrid 5-1 at the Nou Camp earlier in this campaign. Barca win this and do it convincingly again too. Barcelona -1 is 16-5 and goes down as the nap selection in the second El Clasico of the week.
Let's move on to Sunday then. Watford versus Leicester. Midday kickoff this one at Vicarage Road. Watford are 29-20 to win it. The draw 9-4, Leicester 2-1. Leicester, if you fancy them to win 1-0, 2-0 or 2-1, that's been enhanced. It was 13-5, that's been boosted out to 3-1. And if you fancy Troy Deeney and Jamie Vardy both to score in the game, that was 11-2. That's been enhanced to 8-1. And Jack, the big story coming into the weekend is the return to the Premier League of Brendan Rodgers. The Celtic supporters are seriously aggrieved by the timing of Rodgers' decision. What do you make of the appointment, first of all, and him? He almost, as soon as he heard the call, got in his car and drove down. It seemed that way, Jack, anyway.
Yeah, I think that the appointment's a great appointment. Clearly, Leicester wants someone who plays more expansive, exciting football, who's maybe a slightly bigger personality than Claude Puel, who's a bit more charisma with both with the players and the fans. and who has, you know, who has known Premier League experience. I think in that sense, Rodgers is a great pick. Like, he's done very well at Celtic, Liverpool and Swansea. Yeah. His last three jobs, all in slightly different circumstances. He's got a clear brand of how he likes to play. And I'm really looking forward to having him back in the Premier League. In terms of timing, I can see why Celtic might have their feelings slightly hurt that Rodgers walked out on them when they were fighting for a treble. I guess that just shows like the difference between the standings of the Premier League and Scottish football now, that it would make sense for a manager to walk out on the biggest team in Scotland for a mid-table team in England, just because working in the Premier League is so attractive.
Yeah, and Leicester are a hugely ambitious club as well, and he's going to work with young, talented players. And I suppose, Derek, what else was there for him to achieve in Scotland? If he didn't think they were realistically going to challenge in Europe, is it just worth him sticking around to win the title unchallenged every season?
Well, no. It's obviously he was going to move sooner or later. It's just the timing of it a couple of months before the end of the season. If I was a Celtic supporter, thank God I'm not. I'd be a bit upset too. I mean, is he an upgrade on Claude Puel, Brendan Rodgers? Well, I'd suggest Buck Rodgers would be an upgrade on Claude Puel, who was just a disastrous appointment right from the word go. It's noticeable that Rodgers hasn't brought in his own backroom team yet, but I think he has brought in his own dentist. We turned down manager a month ago in Scotland because he heard all he got was a little plaque. He couldn't have that with those two. It's a difficult one to call this because I've seen Leicester a few times this season. I think, well, you know, they should be the best of the rest. They should be in clear tenth. But they've cost me an awful lot of money as well. A bit like every team in this division. Watford, you can't back them now after their surrender at Liverpool. You know, you get to February with Watford, and every season they think, well, we've done our job now, we're safe again, and let's get the flip-flops on. This has gone on for about five seasons now. I thought it might be a bit different under this manager. And, you know, to be honest, to be fair to him, it has looked a bit different. But that performance at Anfield the other night, last night rather, you know, that sent out big warning signs because that was unforgivable. They just didn't turn up. I can't go for them. I think Leicester are too short at 2-1. Even though they should get the new manager bounce. So I'm going again. You know me, Dave. I don't often go for a draw, but this looks like draw written all over it.
I think two times in the same week is a record, actually, Derek, for the draws. Jack, I have been impressed with the work Javi Gracia has done at Watford this season. Whether or not their form tails off, I don't think it matters. They're safe in eighth now, got 40 points, the 5 points ahead of Leicester going into the weekend as well. So he's just done a brilliant job and comes into the reckoning for one of the managers of the season in the Premier League.
Yeah, quite possibly. I think, to be honest, I didn't expect him to be here this long. Remember, he replaced Marco Silva about a year ago after Silva was sacked. And in fact, he's managed to be a much more, permanent appointment. He's not just been there for 6 months. He has got them playing some fantastic stuff, I think, at times, particularly in that game they won at Cardiff recently. But I do think that with the FA Cup quarter-final coming up soon, that will inevitably be the focus of their priorities now. Yeah. That is much more exciting than whether or not they're going to finish 8th, 10th or 12th in the Premier League.
Do you think Rodgers kicks things off with a win?
No, I think Watford will do it. I just think he's got a lot of work to improve this Leicester team, who are pretty down on form and confidence at the moment. I don't think it'll happen overnight.
29-20 Watford to win the game. Let's move on to Fulham versus Chelsea, which is 2:05 on Sunday. Fulham 5-1 to win the game. The draw 100-30. Chelsea 8-15. Enhancements. Chelsea to win by three or more in the match was 7-2. That's now 4-1. Eden Hazard and Gonzalo Higuain both to score in the game. 13-5 out to 4-1. A couple of boosts that could look interesting because we know that Fulham have lost four straight games and are totally doomed. And they've conceded at least two goals in their last nine matches in all competitions. They haven't been proactive enough either. Getting rid of Claudio Ranieri at this stage wouldn't make a blind bit of difference now, Derek. That decision needed to be made 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Well, appointing him in the first place didn't make a blind bit of difference either, did he? He's just if Puel was the wrong man for the job, well, Ranieri certainly was. He always looks like a man worried that he's left the oven on. And he got against Maurizio Sarri. He looks like a man worried that he's left Jorginho on. With two hangdog Italians. And, you know, you look at both of them, you think, how on earth do they ever inspire a side? You've got to go to... I mean, Chelsea look good things, don't they? But you can never trust them. 4-7 or 8-15, I think you said.
Yeah, 8-15.
I mean, Fulham are just gone and they're not playing for the manager. Even if they had a manager they liked, I don't think they're capable of playing for him either. You know, one thing you would say about Sarri, the Chelsea manager, is he made the right move in midweek to drop the keeper Kepa, unless Kepa dropped himself, of course. That's always a possibility. You know, and he's maybe regained a bit of authority that he'd lost out after what happened at Wembley. And the team did look like they were playing for him in both of those games, the City game and also in midweek. So you've got to go for Chelsea. Just mainly, not because Chelsea are playing anything brilliantly, it's just that they're playing Fulham and that's pretty much a gimme in the Premier League these days.
Chelsea -1 on the handicap is available at 13-10. I was so pleased, Jack, when that team news was announced for the game against Spurs that Maurizio Sarri decided to drop Kepa, because that culture of player power has reigned supreme at Chelsea for so long. I thought he was absolutely spot on to punish Kepa for his mutinous behaviour, and he was vindicated in the end as well.
Yeah, completely. And I think a lot of Chelsea fans have never really felt as supportive of Sarri until now, until this has given them something to kind of to unify them in their support of the manager. Because I think so many people were so offended by how Kepa acted. It was so... I was at Wembley for the game. I've genuinely never seen anything like it. And I think a lot of people, it really struck a chord with how at Chelsea the manager is... how poorly the manager is often treated and respected, and how the players often think that they can kind of get away with doing what they want, because if this guy doesn't like them, then there'll be someone else in next week. Whether or not it will change like the bigger questions about Sarri's management, about Jorginho and the tactics and the style of play, and whether he's got the right players, I don't know. I mean, I think that will ultimately hinge on their performance in the Europa League, whether or not they can come forth in the Premier League, and what direction Abramovich wants to take them in. But I do think that right now, the Kepa thing is working for Sarri.
Yeah, and as for Fulham, we pretty much know that Fulham are going down now, Jack, and they don't seem to have been proactive enough, in my opinion. I know it's easy just to say sack the manager, but things just... they never even got that new manager bounce with Claudio Ranieri.
I know. I think the problem is they've been making it up as they go along a bit this season, Fulham. They didn't at the start of the season, they were too ambitious. They tried to sign too many players. They tried to sign the players that you would get if you wanted to finish eighth in the Premier League rather than just trying to stay up.
Yeah.
Then with Ranieri, they got a manager who was completely different from Jukanovic, who wanted a completely different style of play, which he didn't have the right players for. The players didn't take to him. The fans didn't take to him. His sidelining of Tom Kearney and Ryan Sessegnon, the two best players from last season, and the Jukanovic when they came up, went down very badly. It was so clear so early on that it was never going to work. And the defence is just as bad as it's ever been, pretty much. So, I mean, clearly they're going down. They're going to have to start again next year. And I'm sure they will think this summer that they might as well have just stuck with Jukanovic, who, if nothing else, the man who knows how to get you out of the Championship.
Mm. What's the thought on this game? Chelsea by a few?
Yeah, by 3 or 4.
Okay, Chelsea -2 goals in the match. So Chelsea to win by 3 or more goals in the game. 7-2, which looks pretty good to me. And we finish with Everton versus Liverpool at Goodison, the Merseyside derby. Everton 24-5 to win it. The draw 3-1. Liverpool odds on at 6-10. If you fancy Liverpool to win both halves, that was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 100-30. A bet here for Derek as well. Mohamed Salah to score 2 or more in the game was 9-2. That's been boosted to 6-1. And Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's been in good form, he's got 11 in the league this season. That equals his highest ever tally in the top flight. Him to score anytime was 13-5. That's been boosted to 7-2. Jack, this is a fixture in which Liverpool have a rich recent history. Unbeaten in 18 against Everton. They've drawn 9 of those and won the other 9. And even though Everton broke a string of 3 straight Premier League losses with a win against Cardiff midweek, I think Liverpool will be going to Goodison confident of extending that unbeaten run.
Yeah, I should think so. And I do think that I wonder if this Liverpool team has a bit of a psychological hold over this Everton team. I mean, I remember that the first derby this season where Jordan Pickford memorably spilled the ball to Divock Origi, that was a real turning point, I think, probably for both teams. Like, it took Everton months to recover from it, and it gave Liverpool a real boost in their title push. So it would be interesting to see if that's still hanging over the teams, if Everton still have an inferiority complex, or if Liverpool can kind of use it against them to open up a bit more ground at the top of the table.
The narrative seems to change every single week with Liverpool as well, Jack, because before the midweek performance, that fantastic 5-0 win against Watford, people were saying maybe Klopp's intensive regime is catching up with the players at this stage in the season. But now all of a sudden, they're back, Liverpool, and it's probably the real story lies somewhere in between, perhaps.
Yeah, it's true. You can paint it whichever way you want. They were very good, obviously, last night. Just they were. They beat Bournemouth at home. On the other hand, there have been, you know, the Leicester and West Ham draws were very poor performances, and there have been games where they have really struggled to create anything, or like Manchester United away. So I think that there is no one answer. You know, they're capable of playing very well in games where the opposition makes it easy for them. On the other hand, when the opposition doesn't make it easy for them, then sometimes they find it difficult. So we don't know really. I think it depends what Everton are we going to get, which will in part decide what Liverpool we get on the weekend. Like, if Everton do defend properly and work hard and take the game to Liverpool, then it might be difficult. But if Everton struggle with that, then I think Liverpool might blow them away.
How do you expect it to pan out then? Are we going with a Liverpool win, Jack?
Yeah, just about narrow Liverpool win.
Liverpool 6-10 to win the game. If you fancy Liverpool to win and both teams to score, that's available at 2-1 on the William Hill website and on the app. Derek, that midweek performance, we've raved about it on the podcast. Trent Alexander-Arnold was astonishing. His best ever performance in a Liverpool shirt, undoubtedly.
Yeah, he was. He made a big difference to them. I mean, the crossing that he highlighted on TV last night was sensational. It really was for a young fullback. And more important was the performance of Mane at centre-forward. Everyone's raving about that backheel goal, and rightly so, but that header was something to behold as well. It was a real, you know, centre-forward header. And Liverpool are without a centre-forward, really. Maybe they found one there. You know, especially with Salah underperforming for pretty much all of the season. He had a good game on Wednesday night, by all accounts. The reason I'm saying this, Jack, by the way, is that me and Dave, every week we have a fight about Salah. I think he's the most overrated player that's ever really? Worn a red shirt, but Dave thinks he's the second coming. But, I mean, before last night, he's been a passenger for so long that he was asked by a cop fan what his favourite position was, and he said an aisle seat. That's how long he's been a passenger for. I mean, you know, you mentioned that Liverpool's record in the Merseyside derby, 18 without defeat, which sounds fantastic, doesn't it, for a Merseyside derby. But nine of those are drawn. You know, that, on those odds, the draw should be even money, shouldn't it? You know, looking at those base statistics. Certainly Liverpool at 6-10, I just can't have them. Okay, let's see, they battered Watford in midweek, right? But is that a false dawn? Because it was a few weeks ago, after two terrible performances against West Ham and Leicester, that they beat Bournemouth 3-0, pulverised Bournemouth, and we thought, yeah, Liverpool are back.
Yeah.
And then they were crap again then, the next two games against Bayern Munich and Man United. Okay, big games, I know, but still, they were absolutely awful. So maybe this is just another false dawn. As I said, maybe Watford made it easy for them. It sure looked like that. This fixture's finished drawn in five of the six seasons. You know, and in each of those seasons, the gap between the two clubs was probably as wide as it is now. You still want to take 6-10 Liverpool? No. Then do you want to back Everton at what looks a big price? Well, these are some of the teams they failed to beat at Goodison this season. Huddersfield, Southampton, West Ham, Newcastle, Watford, Leicester and Wolves. Why should they beat Liverpool? Why should you back them? Well, I'm telling you why you should back them. The price, they're too big for a Merseyside derby. I'm not saying back them at 5-1 or just under 5-1. I think they are outright. But Everton with a goal start, 5-4, given the number of draws this fixture has, and you know the fact that Liverpool never made at Everton, I think that's a big, big price. And the boost for confidence Everton got in midweek, that was a great result in midweek for them. Gylfi Sigurdsson's two goals, by the way, were absolutely sensational. Yeah, I like Everton with a start, so I really do.
Good reasoning. I like that. 5-4, Everton plus one on the handicap. Now, all we have to do is get the naps for the week, the best bets this week. Jack, you're our guest on the podcast, so we'll start with you. What's your best bet this week?
I think it would have to be Chelsea beating Fulham by a distance, just because Fulham are such a mess, and Chelsea, I think they have got a big performance inside them after the recent frustrations.
Okay, we'll go Chelsea minus two at 7-2 then. So Chelsea to win by three or more goals in the game. Mr. McGovern?
There's no easy pickings on the coupon here. Some teams that you look at way over underpriced, like Wolves, for instance, 1-2 at home to Cardiff. I know that Cardiff are a pony at the moment, but still 1-2 Wolves. You wouldn't be touching that with a barge pole. I'm always tempted to go for the Welshman here, but I can't. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to annoy Liverpool fans and go for Everton with a goal start at 5-4.
Very good. Everton plus one at 5-4. I'm going for an anytime goal scorer this week. I'm going to go with Harvey Barnes to score anytime at 19-5 away from home against Watford for Leicester. I think he's going to thrive under Brendan Rodgers, and he had 7 shots midweek against Brighton. He's going to get a goal soon, in my opinion. So I'm going Barnes anytime away from home against Watford at 19-5. So that treble, Chelsea minus 2 at 7-2, Everton plus 1 at 5-4, and Barnes to score anytime at 19-5. Pays just under 50-1 here with William Hill. So do check that out. Jack, thank you for your company on the podcast.
My pleasure. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Derek.
Cheers, no problem.
Thank you everyone that's tuned in and listened to the podcast. We're going to finish with a look at the Football League, starting off with the best bet in the Championship with Pete Farries.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and I'm taking Hull this week in the Championship to beat Birmingham. They're 29-20, and for me that's a really nice price when you consider that Hull have been fantastic at home of late. They've won 6 of the last 7 so far at the KCOM Stadium, and have been looking very, very good in front of goal. 6 past Bolton, 3 past Wednesday, 2 past Rotherham, Stoke and Millwall, although of course they drew against Rotherham 2 apiece. For Birmingham, well, they were disappointing against Blackburn, disappointing, of course, against Bolton, but did turn things around midweek with that 2-1 win over Bristol City. That doesn't matter, though. I think Hull are a big price, a good home side, so I'm going to take Nigel Adkins' men at the time of recording at 29-20 to get the win. That's my nap of the week in the Championship. Let's hear from Gav Puszalowski and get his thoughts on League One.
My nap is all about the side in League One with the best goal difference, plus 38, against the side who have got the worst goal difference, minus 30. It is top Luton Town at home to 22nd Rochdale. As you can imagine, outright price, Luton very much odds on to win at home at 42-100, but we can do much better than that. Luton Town, every single victory at home so far this season, apart from one 1-0 victory against Bristol Rovers, every single victory at Kenilworth Road, they have scored more than a goal. They often are scoring twos, threes and fours. And Rochdale, where they've conceded 9 in the last 2 games, and last week we put Plymouth at 6-4 as our nap to beat Rochdale, and Plymouth won 5-1. Rochdale recently lost 5-0 at Doncaster Rovers as well. Add that all up, Luton Town minus 1 goal at 11-10 seems glorious, could even possibly push it to minus 2 at 3-1. But Luton Town minus a goal against Rochdale at 11-10 is my nap in League One this weekend. Looking at League Two is Al Ross.
I could come on here and say Bury 1-2 to beat Macclesfield's a great price, but a blind donkey could pick that one out of the list. So here's another. Macclesfield the League Two's joint losingest to Wayside. Let me sell you instead the notion of a Grimsby win against Cambridge at 8-5, because Cambridge are the other joint losingest to Wayside in the league. There is less chance of them getting a win here than the word losingest getting in the dictionary. Cambridge's only points of late have been against a terrible Port Vale side who've scored precisely 1 goal in their last 7 games. In Cambridge's last 10 away games, they've lost 9. Bottom club Notts County the only exception. That, by the way, the only game of the last 8 on the road in which Cambridge have scored even a single goal. And Grimsby's form is at the other end of the scale. Four wins in five, home and away. The other was a 1-1 draw with in-form Swindon last weekend, away from home, when Grimsby conceded, went down to 10 men and still got an equaliser. It's also been 5.5 hours of football since an away side scored at Blundell Park. So how Cambridge not to score is 7-4 is absolutely beyond me. But you guys like the outrights. So my outright is Grimsby at 8-5.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.